a professor of mathematics, or so I was told. He was known in the underworld as a bit of a problem solver, willing to put his considerable mental resources to work on any problem with both guile and discretion. "I am Professor Moriarty," he announced as he entered my office. His declaration was simple, as one might state a fact of nature, having neither pomp nor humility. "I am told that you wish my services." He was a younger man than I had expected. I had previously assumed that a man of such academic credentials would be elderly and perhaps squinting through spectacles. But the man before me was no such specimen. Instead, being in the prime of his physical condition, with nothing belying his intelligence save the uncanny feeling I got when he looked at me, as if he was looking through me. "May I take your coat and hat?" I offered. "Perhaps you would like a cup of tea."
"That will not be necessary," Moriarty said. "I'm certain I shall not be long. Your message detailed the basics of the problem. Is there anything additional that you care to add?"
"Only that these are the three suspects," I said, gesturing to the three bloody and gagged men tied to chairs in the centre of the office.
"I had surmised that much," Moriarty admonished.
Steepling his fingers as he walked, he inspected each man in turn. "Shall I ungag them, Professor?"
Moriarty did not look away from the men as he replied, "I fail to see how that could possibly help. No doubt all three would plead their innocence. As each is a seasoned criminal, it would be impossible to tell who was lying. Furthermore, anyone betraying their master in an organization such as yours will have no doubt taken steps to ensure his story will stand up to scrutiny, likely even arranging planted evidence showing they were unable to have committed the crime."
"Anyway, it is of no consequence," Moriarty said, finally turning back to me. "This man here is your traitor." He pointed to Cheeky Dave. The accused shook his head vigorously and moaned urgently through his gag. "How could you possibly know, Professor?" I asked.
"It's really quite simple if you pay attention to the details. You will note that both his wrists show chafing upon them. Further, you will see that his posture, even while tied up, is significantly leaning to the left. Also, the quality of his hat is above reproach, and there is a racing form in his pocket."
Perplexed, I said, "I fail to see how any of that is damning evidence, Professor."
"It tells a story, my good man," he replied. "Chafing on one wrist might indicate a simple accident or brawl, but identical chafing on both can only mean he was recently in handcuffs, within the last 24 hours, otherwise it would have healed more. While in lock-up, he was set upon by rival gang members who beat him mercilessly. He is in some pain, as you can see, leaning to the left due to broken ribs. Seeing his life flash before his eyes, he saw a solution to all his problems. He would turn against you. The rival gang members stopped their assault when he offered to sell you out, and the police, happy to have inroads to shutting you down, forgave him whatever crime he had been caught for. How else can you explain him being in handcuffs recently, but not still being locked up? Furthermore, as I mentioned, his hat is impeccable. A man such as this does not have his hat cleaned on any occasion, so it must be a new one. I estimate its worth to be a good £5, considering its quality. No doubt, this was purchased with money given to him by the rival gang in payment for selling you out to the police."
"My word, that is amazing," I admitted. "And the racing form, how does that figure in?"
"The form shows that he was at the track, and I'm sure will provide a perfect alibi, showing that he is quite innocent. I am also certain that any number of people at the track will vouch that he was there at the time."
"But Moriarty," I protested, "this proves the exact opposite of your claim."
"Do try to keep up. As I already said, the guilty man will have set up an alibi in advance. This is his, but it has one significant flaw. I keep my ear to the ground, as you might say. I know the ins and outs of those who work in the underworld. And I know a little about Cheeky Dave. He can neither read nor write, so what good does a racing form do him? It serves no purpose other than to provide an alibi. Were he actually innocent, he would have no form in his pocket at all."
"Goodness me, Moriarty, that was amazing," I said, while slitting Cheeky Dave's throat. As I untied the other two, I added, "Honestly, I am agape at your prowess."
"Think nothing.